This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel. Today's question is, can I analyze the Jacqueline Audace case? In this case, we really don't have any type of background, so I'll start with the timeline of the alleged crimes, and then I'll move to my analysis. This case takes place in Arizona. At the center of it is a makeup artist named Jacqueline Audace. She was in her early 30s, and she would later say she was on a road trip from Miami, Florida, looking for love. My understanding, though, is at the time of the incident, she did live in Phoenix, Arizona. In 2017, Jacqueline used a multimillionaire matchmaking app to arrange a date with a CEO who lived in Paradise Valley. The date ended in sex, but the man did not want to continue the relationship. Jacqueline started sending texts to this businessman. Over the course of about 10 months, she allegedly sent 159,000 text messages. At first, the messages didn't seem to be particularly unusual. She wrote things like, "You have to be nice to me," and "I love you." But then the tenor changed, and a number of threats were evident. Just a few examples. She told him that she would make sushi out of his kidneys, use his bones for chopsticks, and wear his flesh like a suit. It strikes me that all three of these seem to be about utility. She was going to get the most out of his body. It's almost like a stalker who appreciates recycling. It's one thing to stalk, but being wasteful is where she draws the line. As if those messages really didn't convey her point, she made it even more clear by saying that she would kill him if he ever tried to leave her. I'm not sure that message was necessary, given the whole bones for chopsticks part and other remarks. Maybe she was concerned that he would think that she was just going to borrow those parts and was going to give them back later. This is like a looter running out of a store with a 52-inch television and saying to a bewildered clerk, "Just so you understand, I'm not bringing this back." In addition, she allegedly showed up at his house on one occasion. She was escorted off the property. On another occasion, when the man was out of the country, she allegedly made entry into his house and took a bath in his bathtub. She had a few things with her, a bottle of wine, food, and her two dogs. She also had an 8-inch butcher knife on the passenger seat of her car. She was arrested and charged with trespassing and stalking. She was released, but she failed to appear at her next court date. After this, she showed up at his work pretending to be his wife. She was arrested again and not offered any type of bail. She had a chance right away to take a plea deal that would have allowed her to be released from prison, but a condition of that deal was not to contact the man. She did not think the deal was real, and she thought the man was testing her resolve with that offer. She was found mentally incompetent to stand trial. A judge delayed her trial in order to give mental health professionals an opportunity to restore her to competency. Later, the charges would be dropped because Jacqueline was declared non-restorable. The last update I found with this case was that she was being transferred from prison to a behavioral health facility. She was supposed to stay there for a couple weeks, and her parents were going to take her back to Florida, where she would continue mental health treatment. During the time she was incarcerated, we see a number of unusual statements. Some were given during an interview with the press at the jail. She also wrote a number of unusual items on her Instagram page. Here are a few of the things that she said or wrote. The threatening messages were a joke. She loved the victim. She would never hurt him. He was her soulmate. She believed that the jury would not only find her not guilty, but they would also demand that she and the man get married. So I guess this is something like, we the jury find the defendant not guilty, but we find the defendant guilty of being in true love. I don't know how that's supposed to work. I've never heard of a jury ordering people to get married.
Hello, this is Gary Chahot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present, If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence. And give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
In trying to explain her behavior, she indicated that she had an argument with her mother and took her anger out on the victim. She said, "If I had a perverted imagination, what would I think?" She went on to say, "And then I wrote all these weird things. I was literally playing with my imagination, and it turned out that that scared him." She said that when she was released from jail, she would go to Florida and would not contact the man because she believed he would contact her first. She stated, "I just think it's ridiculous. I can't believe that it turned into this. I can't believe that I'm actually in jail over some text messages." That's like saying the solid rocket boosters for the space shuttle generated some horsepower. She claimed that she had been abducted on a prior occasion by Walt Disney. She believed that Disney flew a spaceship and was a member of the Illuminati. She appeared to have a fixation on several numbers. 33 really stood out, but she also mentioned 3 and 0. Love seemed to be a theme in some of her statements as well. She was looking for a healing angel. She felt that love was an excessive thing. She needed to share the message of love, and she was the person who discovered love. She believed that Adolf Hitler was a genius. She knew the location to Atlantis, and she said that money was created to stifle the imagination. So I guess this means she didn't have money because she did appear to have a lot of imagination. Not sure what she meant here. So what could be going on in a situation like this? There was no report in the media about any specific diagnosis, and only a professional who evaluates her in person could say anything on that topic with any certainty. There are many possibilities. It could be nothing is going on. She could simply have unusual beliefs. It could be something related to psychosis, like schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, or bipolar disorder. There's really no way to know. We don't know what her behavior was like before this. Did she always act like this, or is this something new? Were substances involved? She seems to be fairly industrious. It's a lot of work to send 159,000 messages over 10 months. To put it in perspective, this is as many messages as the average user in her age range sends and receives in 6 years. All we really have in this case, as far as mental health, is the court saying that there was some type of mental health issue which warranted her not going to trial and having the charges dismissed. Presumably, that means that somebody in the court system believed mental health care was required, and the symptoms were serious enough that they impaired her ability to aid in her own defense. With this in mind, I think what concerns me with this case is the whole jailhouse interview part. I think those reporters knew that something out of the ordinary was going on with Jacqueline, and she needed to be evaluated and treated by mental health professionals. Yet she was permitted to give this interview to the press, and they just kept going at her for about 18 minutes, as if they were trying to make sense of something they knew did not make sense. They were pointing out her symptoms. She did not appear to be in distress, but I wonder how it will affect her in the future. Like if she tries to get a job and the potential employer sees that interview, they're probably not going to be too enthusiastic about hiring her. I don't know how this interview came about or why it was allowed. Perhaps her attorney permitted it to demonstrate Jacqueline's condition. Maybe Jacqueline wanted to do it. There's no information available about that. I'm also curious about why the victim wouldn't simply block Jacqueline's number after a few text messages. Are we to believe that someone who's extremely wealthy can't figure out how to use the block feature on his phone or hire someone who can do it for him. There's also no mention of her breaking into his house. She was charged with criminal trespassing, not burglary, which tells me that either he left his doors unlocked, which seems unusual for what I imagine was some type of mansion, or she had a key. This makes me wonder if she did not have permission at one time to go onto his property, and it was a matter of that permission being revoked, as opposed to her actually breaking in to the house. If that's the case, did they really have just that one date, or something closer to the three dates that Jacqueline indicated in that jailhouse interview? I think this case highlights the importance of proper mental health care in the criminal justice system. No matter what actually happened in this case, I hope that Jacqueline gets the care that she may require.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Did you guys hear about that couple that went on vacation and one spouse murdered the other? In fact, the entire vacation was planned just so that they could make the murder look like an accident.
Ah, so like a slaycation.
Oh boy, sounds like a fun new true crime podcast to me.
On every episode of Slaycation, we'll examine true cases of people who were killed while on vacation.
Was it murder? Or just a horrible accident? That's up to you and the law to decide.
But either way, if you leave for your vacation in the plane and come home under the plane, you've definitely gone on a slaycation.
Join us every week for a fascinating new episode.
911, what's your emergency?
But make sure to pack your body bags,
because getting away can be murder.
This is Slaycation.